Whoa! The On The Ball podcast is back this week. Me, producer Gio, and Mark are joined by a very special guest as we talk about the World Cup ticket information. Jose Mourinho comes out and he says, Wayne Rooney or bust. Manchester United bid for Cesc Fabregas. Manchester City buy two new strikers. Tito Villanova resigns. This and so much more. We're on the ball. Good morning, welcome to the On The Ball podcast. It's me, Jake Fields, producer Gio's here, and Mark Mayer's here. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing fantastic.
I wore my Man U shirt just for Mark, because he wore it a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And now he's let me down. I thought we're gonna match shirts. What's going on?
I cannot support the use of the description for Manchester United saying Man U.
You won't say Man U?
I will not. Oh. Man United. Manchester United.
The Red Devils.
Not, yes.
Okay.
Not Man U. Why?
Why?
Why? Tell me why.
Now you tell me why. You have the problem with it.
Because Liverpool fans, the cop's use, and the play on, the sound.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Man U.
Well, we are live right here at the Londoner in Uptown. And we'll go straight into it. Remember, you can tweet us at On The Ball Show, or you can go on our Facebook page, On The Ball Soccer Podcast, and comment, review the show. Again, as I always say, tell me that I'm amazingly right about everything, or tell me that I'm talking utter crap, which most people do. We go straight into it. Big topic. I know me and Mark are happy to talk about this topic, because it's close to our Manchester United laden hearts. Wayne Rooney, this week. If you don't know out there in podcast world, Jose Mourinho came out and said he had made a bid for Wayne Rooney. And it was Rooney or bust. That Wayne Rooney was the only Chelsea transfer target this summer. Mark, first of all, your reaction on the bid. We can be as unbiased, at least at the beginning part. Would he be a great player for Chelsea, and what do you make of the whole situation?
I think he'd be frighteningly good for Chelsea. The thing that I like about Mourinho is that, and he's done this at every club that he's been at, he deflects attention from his players. And I think, I was listening to a radio show. And they were saying, one of the guys had said that Rooney had seemed as though he had fallen out of love with the match, with the game. And I would tend to agree. I think that his agent is...
Paul Stratford, yeah, is his agent.
I think it is playing him. I think that he's playing him for a dollar.
I mean, do you think Rooney should move?
I think not. I would rather... I know in the past I've said that I thought he would, but I would rather he didn't. I think that having watched United play in their preseason, this past match, the Aussie 11,
yeah,
the All-Star...
All-Star A-League team, that's right.
...was just like the beginning of last season when all those kids came out and they were playing such good ball. Cleverley and Anderson together, and then Cleverley got hurt.
So after watching that, you think, well, maybe life after Wayne Rooney wouldn't be that awful.
No.
Or the thought of it.
I think that putting Rooney in the middle of that will be very exciting.
Oh.
I think that we will be able to play with one guy up front and then control the middle. And that really has been our weakness, absolutely controlling the middle.
Mm.
We've never had a hard man, and we kind of depended on Carrick for that.
Yeah.
Who had some very questionable passes in these two matches.
I mean, if people don't know, my view on Michael Carrick, he's hardly the world class player that. I mean, he did win Manchester United's Players Player of the Year last season, but I think he's 32 now. I mean, he's hardly. He wouldn't get in Chelsea's team. He probably wouldn't even get in Arsenal's team. And, you know, he couldn't. I don't think he's particularly very good. There's better players out
actually,
there.
Actually, I just read something about United having turned down an Arsenal bid for Carrick.
they got quick on the Mourinho Rooney thing.
Yes, I think Rooney would blow up under him.
Well, that's because because Jose Mourinho is fantastic. We've waxed lyrically before about him. And then obviously Mata, Hazard, Oscar. He'd be tremendous. What do you make of David Moyes came out and he said that he's ready for the mind games with Jose Mourinho. Do you think this? I mean, I thought Mourinho's known for his mind games
and
his usage of the media to the. Yep. I thought it was interesting. The whole thing is he comes out, Jose Mourinho's press conference, and says Wayne Rooney's our only target. We've made a bid. And then he gets asked the next day about it, and he says, "Oh well, it's not my business to talk about other players." Right after he's just done it, and then he says, "Well, if players don't play for their first team, they're probably not going to go to the World Cup."
Yes,
and it's
look,
Wayne Rooney, even if he was injured for the whole of next season, but was fit enough for the summer, he'd make the England squad.
Yes,
so it's got nothing to do with.
But see, that's Mourinho. Yeah. I don't really think that the offer of what 26 million was really that sincere.
You think it was just a wind-up tool, you think? Just to get underneath
You
Moyes'
better
skin?
Believe it. Mourinho is a...
If people want to know a look into the future, I think it's fair to say this coming season, it's going to be all about Mourinho. Now, because he's back and he's a flamboyant character, very charismatic as it is.
Yes.
But you have David Moyes, who is a lot more laid back than Alex Ferguson was in terms of he won't.
Right.
We haven't seen him really come out and fight.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And then we have Pellegrini, who's not like Mancini. He's a lot
right.
more reserved.
Yeah.
So you can bet your bottom dollar it's all about Mourinho.
Well the question that was or the response that was stated to the question about the Mourinho mind games was asked by
a Scottish journalist.
Yes. Hmm. And Moyes replied, "Well, I recognize your accent as my own, so that tells me you're from Glasgow. And I can tell you that people from Glasgow enjoy that kind of play."
Yeah.
So I think he's looking forward to it, just like Fergie did. Mm. Sir Alex. I mean, really, that guy started it all.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody now knows. It's like when you turn a noun into a verb. Google, Xerox, Fergie time. Everybody uses it. It can be applied to anyone else. Anyone else playing soccer at the end of the match, it's Fergie time. The USA just took advantage of that Fergie time. So,
yeah,
it's applicable. I think Chelsea, with the evolution of Mata, Hazard, Lucas, anybody you put in front of them is going to be frightening, because those guys are playing together and they've got a season and a half or a season under their belts together. I think that this coming season Chelsea is going to be so hard, and I'd rather they go after Suarez in front of them. I think that'd be a better buy for them, but
better buy than Rooney.
Yeah. I think that's a smarter buy.
Yeah.
I really think that Rooney is not what Mourinho wants. I think that Mourinho is just getting the digging started. He's just putting a notch on his belt. Okay, I got everybody talking about Rooney coming to Chelsea.
Yeah.
I got that started.
The season starts here.
Yes. I am so excited for this coming season. I'm so excited.
I mean, to end the Rooney segment, will he go? Will he leave Manchester United? And will it be to Chelsea?
No.
He's staying.
Oh, look at that! Red Devil!
He's staying!
Love it. I cannot imagine United being hungry enough for money to sell him to their... I think Chelsea is their greatest
rival next season. I agree. Yes. I absolutely agree.
There's no... I can't imagine them being stupid enough to sell him.
But you can't imagine them being Arsenal.
They were talking about Moyes having his own handler immediately after he sat down in the most recent interview. Hmm. The most recent Q&A. Immediately after sat down, his handler was trying to get him to stand up. So I read that they have 200-plus people, United staff, on tour with him. So United is very organized. Very, and so I can't imagine you'd be that organized and sell one of your top players to someone who's going to possibly beat your butt this coming season. So, no, I don't think he's going to do it. I don't think it's going to be to Chelsea. I think that Mourinho was talking. He was just talking.
I mean, this whole segment is obviously about Chelsea and Manchester United. Quickly going on to something also Jose said this week. He referenced himself. He used to call Sir Alex Ferguson boss, mm-hmm. or the dad, you know, that kind of thing. And now he's known, or getting known, as the godfather of the Premier League, because, you know, one of the great indicators of how great Ferguson was you had all his former players retire and become coaches. Mm-hmm. That's how inspirational he was. Well, yes. Mourinho now has Rodgers at Liverpool, who was one of his coaches. He has Villas-Boas, who was his scout. Mm-hmm. So he came out this week and said he's the godfather. He's taken the mantle from Fergie, and he'll be there for other managers. I mean, is that a role you think Mourinho will be good at, or you think he enjoys going one toe-to-toe rather than being the elder statesman?
Well, I don't think that he has the same foundation that Sir Alex had, the foundation of fighting tooth and nail. Mm. I think that... I think his thing is publicity. I think he does have a lot to offer, but in a different way. I mean, one of the things that has come out so much in the things I've read recently are the mentality of United players of getting the taste of the blood, the winning, and wanting to repeat it, to replicate. And Cleverly just came out and was talking about that. He said, I got a taste of it, and I really, really want it now. I know what it's like to have it stolen from me the previous season with City. This season was it. I don't want to not have that feeling again. I don't just want it. I really, really want it. So... I think that the difference between Mourinho and Fergie is that. I don't think that Mourinho really has that absolute fight.
And I agree, and I think it's noteworthy. I mean, Fergie, to use a phrase, paid his dues over the years to get into the position of the godfather, the older statesman. Whereas, you know, Fergie struggled for years.
Yes, he
didn't
did.
Win anything at Man U, I think, for the first 7 years.
Yep,
And whereas Mourinho's...
He leaves after three or four.
I mean, something
came out a few days ago, probably Friday, that said that he told Inter that he'd be there in 3 years. He has a four-year contract. What is the deal with that?
Who knows? But you mentioned Cleverly. Mm-hmm. His position might be under threat. Since the last pod... Two transfer bids. One was rebuffed. Second one coming. Manchester United for Cesc Fabregas. Could be the second Arsenal captain to be at Manchester United after Robin Van Persie. Your thoughts on that?
I don't know about Fabregas. Even though I like him as a player, I don't think that he has... what's required. I think that he was made captain of Arsenal by default. There was nobody better than he was. I don't think that he has a leader's state of mind, because if he did, he wouldn't be third string, fourth string. Because even though statistically he was of value to Barcelona this past season, he's not in it.
Yeah,
he's not being played in the position that he would normally be played in, out wide, up front, second striker.
Yeah,
he's not playmaker. He's not what he was at Arsenal. I don't think that he has he can't say that he won it, anything. He can't say that. Now, Van Persie can say that. He contributed. Fabregas, he got it because Iniesta, Messi, and Xavi, and the other guys did it. That's how he got his medal, because he showed up enough times, he was put on the pitch enough times to earn it. He can't say that he earned it. So I don't think that he has what's required to be in the midfield for United. And I think that although he'd be a great player to have on the bench.
You don't think he would be a more adequate player in the midfield of Manchester United than, say, a Carrick or a Cleverley or certainly an Anderson? I would say he's an improvement on all three of those players.
Here's the thing. Cleverley is still young. How old is Fabregas? 27?
I think he's 26. 26? Cleverley's 23.
Okay. Cleverley, if you look at his face when he plays, it's almost like he's angry.
You know, we're going to have an argument about the potential of Thomas Cleverley here. There's wide debate. You think he's going to turn out to be something?
He has more fight. He's the guy that will go chase down the guy that took the ball from him.
But
Fabregas,
his quality really isn't as good as...
I would rather have a guy that will chase down a ball after he lost it because he held it too long than a guy that will hold it and try and find that perfect pass. I mean, you and I actually talked 3 seasons ago about how hilarious Arsenal were. They could hold the ball forever right outside the box along the 18. Hold it forever, but they couldn't put it in the net. Yeah. They could pass it forever, but they couldn't do anything with it. That is Fabregas. If he doesn't have the players around him to do anything, he won't. And I don't think he will fight that hard to get the ball back. Cleverley, I think, will run the pitch to get the ball back after he lost it. That's the difference. I would rather play besides Cleverley than I'd
play against play with Fabregas.
I would like to play against Fabregas, but I'd rather have Cleverley beside me. I'd rather have Rooney beside me than against me, but I'd love to go against Rooney. Fabregas, I think, does not have the balls. I think he's better in Spain.
Will the transfer happen? 30 million, they say, plus
Adams. Have you heard what's going on with Xavi? The press is talking about how he's declining, and 2014, this season in 2014, will show whether or not the football brain that he has can stand up to his body, what his body can do. He's 31 now.
Who, Xavi?
Xavi.
I think he's older. I think he's about
32,
yeah.
Okay. So I think that Barcelona is going to want to hold on to Fabregas.
Well, the talk is that A, they say he's not for sale at any price, and then B, obviously Fabregas saying that he wouldn't want to leave. But Moyes seems quietly confident.
Manager turnover.
Which is fantastic segue.
Yes.
From Fabregas and manager turnover to Barcelona, Tito Villanova sadly had to step down. If listeners don't know, obviously had cancer diagnosed, I think, about a year and a half ago. So he was on and off flying from New York back to Barcelona during treatment. Obviously,
a very, very odd cancer, too. The gland that produces saliva.
Yeah. I mean, very, very unfortunate. Obviously, everyone on the Ball podcast wishes him the best. I mean, how does this affect a team like Barcelona when something like that happens? Obviously, it would have been difficult last season.
Jordi, Jordi? What was the guy's name that stepped in, the second manager?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
You you could. It's really unfortunate that they depend so much on one leader.
Mm. Well, yeah.
To play well day after day. I mean, really, having a squad is no different than say owning a restaurant. You really do your work outside.
What Mark's talking about is pretty much that last season, obviously Tito Villanova was off having treatment,
mm-hmm.
and all the Barcelona players pretty much trained themselves, and they didn't have that figure. They didn't have the Guardiolas, but or Villanova to lead them and instruct mm-hmm. them, and they had this assistant on the bench who would, whenever something would happen, would get on the phone and call up Tito Villanova in hospital and say, what team should we play? You know, so I mean, many people blame that for Barcelona's relative lack of success last season.
And now there was a Luis Enrique? No. Who's the guy that just came on this season? Just came on to join the management team.
His last name's Ferrer.
Yes.
Ferrer, yeah.
Yes, came from a second division, took a second division.
To the playoffs or something like that. That's right, in Spain. And then he became Tito Villanova's assistant, I guess.
Yes.
Now he might be coach. We'll see. I mean, Barcelona tend to promote from within.
Yes.
There was talk Andre Villas-Boas, the Spurs manager, might go over. He said no.
Michael Laudrup,
who also denied it. Former Barcelona player. But I guess Barcelona will promote from within. I mean, there's slight rumblings.
They said it's going to be someone from outside.
From outside?
Yes.
Because the other talk was...
There's going to be a caretaker manager, but they will hire from the outside because they don't have what they need inside.
Roberto Mancini?
Oui. You pankers.
Pankers came out yesterday, I think, and said no.
Nope.
No, he doesn't want it.
I'm tending my garden.
maybe talking about, I mentioned Mancini obviously being linked with Barcelona. Manchester City, two new strikers. Negredo transfer.
Yeah.
Alvaro Negredo from Sevilla. And then, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Jovetic of Florentina.
I think, well,
22 million.
Yes. Both very hungry players.
Hmm.
My question is, Dzeko. Well, he was third choice this past season. What is he going to, go back to Germany?
They want four strikers. They now have, obviously, they sold Carlos Tevez and Balotelli left in January.
Yeah.
Now they have Aguero, Dzeko, Jovetic, and Negredo. I mean, but you're right. What does Dzeko do? Their choice. And he was probably their best striker last season.
Yeah, he was their version of the super sub. And he played a different game from all of them. I mean, Tevez and Aguero were both those little Chihuahua-style strikers that were all over the place. You couldn't really knock off the ball. They'd hold the ball and pass it and look to squeak it in. Dzeko is really technically gifted from what I've seen and has just this stature that's amazing. He's able to hold the ball. He's able to hold guys away from him enough with that wingspan. But they've got... if they hold on to him and they play him, I think it could be really exciting because watching Navas play for Spain was frightening as a United player, knowing that he was going to City because the guy did not seem like he was stoppable. He would find a way through. I mean, he's a tricky little bastard. The same as Dani Alves. He's really skilled and defensively minded, but a great, great player. And having him on the side, I think Milner is going to be SOL, but Navas is a big step up.
And then they have David Silva, obviously, on the other side.
Silva is a center player. He's not really a
moving
a
to
winger.
The center.
Yeah, he's a
next to Yaya Toure. Frightening prospect.
Yep.
But they're the big spenders in the Premier League, certainly this summer, Manchester City.
I think if Pellegrini uses Dzeko the right way, it's going to be scary. But I can't see him getting a lot of play because they've got that Spanish style of play that they're trying to bring around, and he doesn't fit the bill. So I think he's going to be unhappy.
And talking about strikers, Cavani, Edison Cavani finally signs with a team, and it's with Paris Saint-Germain. $55 million, which I think when I texted Gio and Mark a few days ago or yesterday, I said it was the fourth highest signing of all time. I believe it's the third highest transfer fee of all time. Edison Cavani signed with Paris Saint-Germain for $55 million, which is the second with third highest transfer fee of all time, behind Ronaldo at 80, at 56, Cavani at 55.
$55 million?
People were going crazy on my Facebook.
I don't think that they really have the value of that.
That's a ridiculous side of money. I mean, okay, great for Napoli, but that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. It's a stupid amount, and that's what's frightening about the direction football is taking. And fair play, fair play is going out the window.
Financial fair play, which we talk about on this pod a lot. I mean, clearly is not. Wow, I guess it's been pushed aside.
Loopholes. It's, what's the Qatari United Emirates? Is going to go ahead and donate $200 million every year to
Paris Saint-Germain.
These four clubs because they're awesome.
But that's a frightening prospect next season for Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League when you have Cavani, Lavezzi, Ibrahimovic. And that's quite a three-pronged attack.
Well, I think it's funny. Madrid is doing a lot of selling. Mm. Contrao possibly. Albiol just went to Napoli.
And there's talk that Kaká might go, obviously, might leave Madrid.
Yeah, well, it's about time. I think he's unhappy.
And they're signing all these youngsters that we spoke on the pod last week. Interesting in terms of the European leagues and what's going on. We spoke about last week, obviously, you won on the pod. And we spoke about Serie A, their decline. That league's decline over the years. It even looks like now with Cavani and players like this coming to the French league, it's almost becoming the French league is overtaking Serie A now with Paris Saint-Germain and Monaco.
Yep, I think that the French league, the oil money that is traveling the world, is crazy. I mean, was it three seasons ago that rumors of Qatari ownership came into United, Glazer selling?
That's right.
I hope that they stand strong and don't try and sell out because United has reached over $1 billion. I think that Italy was slammed and they continue to be slammed by the
Calciopoli.
Yes, the match fixing. And gambling, the effect that gambling syndicates have had on football. And four seasons ago that Italy, the Calciopoli scandal. Mm-hmm. Then the season after that, it was the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. It was referees. And then China, Thailand, the Philippines. Mm-hmm. African, it's just absurd.
We had the African thing where one team beat the other team 75
to
nothing.
It was two matches, 69 and 65 and 79. It's just crazy. It's crazy. So the effect that gambling is having on the game is really unfortunate. I think that that is where the decline of Italy. Serie A started. When you've got guys that care more about money than the badge on their shirt, that's what happens. And the whole country is having a hard time.
Yeah.
And when you're broke, you turn to a couple of things.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
Yep. One of those is drink, and the other one is what you can pour your heart into, and that's football. And Americans don't really grasp that, but that's how it is over there. And when you've got guys that are top players that are forfeiting the rest of their life when they're in their late 20s, because 3 years ago they were implicated in a scandal, and they were found guilty. Then they lose their soccer life. What do they have to show? Because they threw a game or they were implicated in the throwing of a match. So that's the downfall of Italian soccer. And you see that with the money that Inter Milan is spending on players and who they're selling. You see that with AC Milan. You see Juventus is the powerhouse now. They're bringing players in. But when you've got long-standing club owners looking at selling, Berlusconi possibly looking at jail.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the guy's a politician, a club owner, and he's looking at jail over a prostitute. It's just messed up. French soccer is going to take over where Italy left off, and it's going to take a while for Italy
to really come back.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but that's the case, I think.
All right, we're going to take a five-minute break. We'll come back. Welcome back to the On The Ball podcast. Quick shout-out to our great beer dispenser, or the guy that's giving us all the beers, Chris O'Hager.
Hader.
Oh, I'm terrible.
Chris O'Hader.
Fantastic, great guy. He's a Manchester United fan, too, so... He's wearing red, he is. How you doing, Chris? He's high-fiving us. He's doing everything. What's up?
That's a low five.
That is a
so
low
white.
Five. The abuse I get on this show is...
But you're right.
Sometimes, but I am right. And we also have Chris. Chris, would you like to say hi? Say it, Chris.
Hello.
What's your last name, Chris?
Garrison. Chris Garrison. How's it going?
Chris Garrison. And you are a Manchester United fan by your
show. Manchester United fan. I live and love and, more than anything, love the freaking Red Devils.
Wearing the Cantona collar. Baby, I love it.
12 Cantonas, 11 Cantonas, 10 Cantonas.
Let's go.
Okay, before we get on to another Manchester United segment, we'll talk about the World Cup tickets. A lot of people, they got released, or the price ranges got released this week. A lot of people have been asking me on Twitter and on Facebook. Remember, that's at On The Ball Show, and the Facebook is... On The Ball Soccer Podcast, asking about the World Cup, how much are the tickets? We're about to tell you. For the group matches for the World Cup, there's basically three categories. The cheapest tickets will be around $90. The highest will be about $175, and then obviously it escalates. For example, the final is, if you get the best ticket in the final, you know, best seat in the final, it will be about $1,000. And as little as about $450. So those are real price ranges. FIFA say it's going to be the cheapest World Cup they've ever had. I can tell you that's, at the moment, that's true. I went to the World Cup in South Africa in 2010. The tickets are definitely cheaper for next year. Also, someone asked me about plans to get around in Brazil. If people forget, Brazil is a massive country.
It's bigger than Arlington?
Bigger than Arlington.
Wait, it's an actual country? I didn't even know that.
I know, right? it's a massive country. So the distances between stadiums is pretty gigantic. So if I was going to the World Cup, which I am, stated to go, stay at a particular city and go to the games that are in a specific stadium in the city that you're staying at. That's my best advice, because if you're traveling around the country, it's long distances, you have to rent a car, you have to do all this stuff.
You get a boat on a river. I think that's one of the ways to travel.
Really? I thought that's the Qatar World Cup. But we'll get
the
on
river.
but we'll get on that in a second. But yeah, just stay in the city and you'll be fine. World Cup, remember, $90 cheapest tickets in the group matches, so aces. To get the tickets, there's only one place to get them, FIFA.com. August 20th is when the tickets go on sale. There's 3 million tickets going on sale. If you're a Brazilian national, they're extremely cheap. They're way cheaper than $90. Yes. So,
£15,
which is about $25. So if you're a Brazilian national, you're very, very lucky.
Do you have to have the ID
to
use the ticket? So someone there can't buy the ticket for you and for you?
Basically, how they did it in the previous World Cups is you had an ID. They sent you a thing. Basically, a thing put around your neck to check IDs.
But from what from what I understand, like, they did that, but in the end, they actually didn't check the IDs.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Again, it's one of those things in life. It depends case-to-case basis. Some people at the gate will check your ID, some won't. And it's all electronic, really.
It may depend on what is underneath the identification card that you are offering. Is the $30 bill?
How did that get there? So that's the World Cup. FIFA.com, remember, August 20th. Quick note, Qatar World Cup 2022. We spoke a few weeks ago about it. Mark?
Yes, let's change it to the winter.
Let's change it.
Zep Blatter, the most uncorrupted man ever in the history
Sarcasm.
Of mankind.
Sarcasm nut.
Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't see the corruption, so it must not have existed.
That's right.
I wasn't involved in the corruption, so I can't speak on it. Mr. Zep Blatter.
Sepp Blatter.
Obviously, we've come schon Mensch. Du bist ein Arsch.
We've spoken on the pod before about the Qatar World Cup. The decision has been announced that it happened in October.
Yes.
The feeling right now, Sepp Blatter came out and said, well, it looks like it will be in the winter, which disrupts about three years of European seasons.
Every league you can think of, Norwegian league, every league you can think of is completely disrupted at that point.
Not the Russians.
Not the MLS.
There's talk about changing the other. Why aren't the other leagues just changing to the schedule that the MLS runs?
They're not paid as much as Sepp Blatter.
If we just changed every other league to the schedule that we run, we'd be okay.
Well, that decision for the Qatar 2022 World Cup is in October. Now, we go on to the serious topic, which is, of course, Manchester United. Thank you, producer Gio, who was showing me had the ticket prices in front of me so I wouldn't forget them.
He's awesome.
He is awesome. Producer Gio, smiling ear to ear. Manchester United spoke a little on the podcast about Wayne Rooney possibly going to Chelsea. As a outside, well, officially you're now part of the On The Ball Soccer podcast family, but from the outsider's perspective, away from me and Mark, who are Manchester United fans, Wayne Rooney, your opinion?
That's a tough question. I love Wayne Rooney. Honestly, I love Wayne Rooney. He's kind of one of those players that if you get the United States, you know, he gets the USA fans in there. But the problem is with Wayne Rooney, is he's asked to leave now twice. And for me at this point, I don't see United as a soccer team. I see United as like something I love, you know. And so at this point, if you're asking me about Wayne Rooney, if he's asked to leave again, which Ferguson said he did, then I guess at this point, I want to let him go. I'd rather bring a Cesc Fabregas in. I'd rather bring Cristiano back. I'd rather bring Bale in. I don't think Wayne Rooney needs to be here anymore if he really believes that he's not a United player anymore. And that's what he seems to keep portraying. He's angry. He's confused. He's all these things. Let him go. That's my opinion.
I mean,
to distinguish between... when I say we as fans need to distinguish between what we read in the media and all these very creative writers and what is actually so. We don't know.
But Ferguson said he wanted to leave. And at this point, I mean, Ferguson said he asked for a transfer. And that's why he didn't play in the Real Madrid game. That's what he said. And
yeah,
I trust
but that was before Rooney knew that Moyes was coming and things would change a little bit. I have to think that if I'm working for a guy that I'm having a really hard time with, and the guy's always on my ass about
the
my
greatest
weight
coach ever.
And, you know, a new guy's coming in. Yeah, he's my old boss, but things might be different a little bit. We're buying some players. Things might be different a little bit.
He's already done this. He's already done this. That's the problem, is he's already done this. He did this 2 years ago. He already decided to throw us out there and say, hey.
And that was before we got Van Persie.
I think it's interesting the whole Rooney thing, because when he first asked to leave, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he said, well, Manchester United aren't showing the ambition. We need to go out and buy players. Man, you buy Van Persie, and what happens? Rooney bitches and moans that he can't get in the team over Van Persie. What do you guys think about Ryan Giggs came out this week and said there's two kinds of people who play for Manchester United. There's those that love Manchester United, and there's those that are here just for their job. And is Wayne Rooney one of those players that he's an Everton fan?
What was the context of that statement?
Oh, that was a statement where he was talking about Sir Alex Ferguson and how he's played for him for so many years, and he's seen so many players come and go, and he said, well, there's some players that love Manchester United and there's some players that don't see it as their job. Is Wayne Rooney one of those players that sees it as their job? That he doesn't play for the shirt, he plays for himself.
Wow. Well, this is what I talked about with Fabregas and Cleverley. It's the same thing. It's heart. So, I would like to believe that I think Rooney is emotional enough to be attached to something. He's still with his wife, even though he had a variety of dalliances with professional women.
With women you'd find on Harry Hines. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, he's still with his wife. He's trying to make his family thing work. I'd like to believe that he is willing to embrace certain things, certain beliefs. So I do want to give him another chance. I'd like to give him another chance.
I mean, it'd be nice that he stayed at Man. Yeah, he's not that far. I think he's only about 90 goals off of the record from Bobby Charlton.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It'd be nice if he did a Frank Lampard type of thing and beat the record. Obviously, Frank Lampard beat Bobby Charlton's record at Chelsea. Yeah. It'd be nice if Rooney did that, because then he's immortally a legend at Man U. Whereas now, I mean, it might be difficult, guys. Start of next season, here's a guy that you guys have correctly said. He's two transfer requests. I mean, are the fans going to cheer Wayne Rooney, or are they going to boo him?
My issue is he kissed the badge. You want to kiss the badge, believe in it, love United.
Yeah, well, Wayne Rooney kissed the Everton badge plenty of times.
That's my point.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't happen.
He's not a United player. I mean, I love him to death. You could call him Mr. Manchester United, which most people will, because that's what got most USA fans into Manchester United, Wayne Rooney. My point is it's great that he kissed the badge, he sat there, he did all those things. The problem is, he doesn't believe in the team. He'll walk away for a contract, he'll walk away for some. He's looking to walk away. If Ferguson said, hey, Wayne Rooney turned in a transfer request, then I believe Sir Alex Ferguson. I don't believe in Wayne Rooney. I don't believe in him. I think he, like you said, he bitched trying to get players in. You know who he got? He got Robin Van Persie, who took his spot, and now he's gone. He lost his forward spot. And you hear Jose Mourinho saying, oh, well, thing is, if Wayne Rooney is not starting Manchester United, he's not doing the best that he could be. He could be starting Chelsea. Problem is that player, Wayne Rooney, should be at Chelsea. He should be somewhere else. He's not a United player. He doesn't believe in it. He's a Mourinho-type player at this point, unless he says, kiss the badge, love the badge. Once you kiss that badge, you love it. That's what I believe.
I mean,
it's hard to argue with that.
It's hard to argue that, although I would never sell him to Chelsea or Manchester City.
If I was his girlfriend, I'd be saying, you know what? That's not true. but I'm not. I'm not your girlfriend, Chris.
Not yet.
Oi, 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 oi. Holy cow. Let's
on the Bull podcast is sponsored by matchmaker.com.
Quickandeasy.com.
Quick and easy.
Wait, that's a loan. Never mind.
On your
Quickylube.com.
God, we're going to get sued.
Okay. Yes. All right. Can we talk about Newcastle a little bit?
Yes, we can. This is a free... Remember, everyone that listens to this, as I've said last week, we do not plan this podcast. We just come here and chew the fat and start talking. At On The Ball Show, Facebook On The Ball Soccer Podcast. Yes, go, Mark.
Okay, Papi Cisse.
Papi Cisse, yeah, go ahead.
Muslim cannot profit from money lenders who profit from lending money.
Yeah.
There's news about him possibly leaving.
He left the tour, didn't he?
Yes.
The Newcastle tour.
Yes. And they're looking at a couple of French players.
Newcastle. So looking at French players.
I thought they're looking at Lloyd Remy at QPR. They're thinking about maybe getting Remy.
Well, yes, French player. And then there's another guy who's from the French league. But he's a Muslim. That's the funny thing.
See.
Okay, so my question is, one, is Newcastle be gonna turn into the second Arsenal with the French connection? And two, are there Muslims like there's Catholics and Baptists and, you know?
You're doing a cultural thing about England and America. You're talking about like. What, there's a lot more Muslims in England?
No. I'm talking about, one, Newcastle being very French.
Yeah.
French dominant. And the other being that are there degrees of Muslimhood the way that being a Baptist or a Catholic?
I mean, Newcastle are buying obviously a lot of Frenchmen. Started with like Ben Arthur and obviously Kabay or at least French speaking.
Yes,
obviously
from the French league.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, especially from the French league. That might be successful to a certain degree, but it's no Arsenal format. I mean, Arsenal bought the players that won the World Cup in '98 and the European Championships in 2000. They bought the Vieiras, the Henrys. They bought the best players from that team.
Yes, that was back when they were spending money.
But yeah, okay. that was back when
before they became profitable.
All right. So Newcastle, the French look at the French team in the last few tournaments have failed horribly.
Miserably. Yes.
So I mean, these guys, it's a different circumstance. And yeah. I mean, there's obviously different degrees of every religion. There's some, you know, in the Judaism religion, there's Orthodox Jews and there's not Orthodox Jews. I mean, there's obviously some people that follow their religious beliefs to the T, and then there's some that don't.
Yes, so. I dated several Catholic girls who did not.
It's always the quiet ones. The ones that go to church every Sunday you have to watch out for.
Yeah. Well, what they're doing Saturday versus Sunday. I don't care how late I'm going to be out Saturday. I have to be at church. So you need to leave. So, Papi Cisse.
Yeah.
Potentially leaving Newcastle. I tell you what. The strike that he had against Chelsea.
No, it's beautiful.
The most amazing strike I've seen. Similar in importance and skill to the Bergkamp strike, where it was over his shoulder, first time, boom. Cisse did that thing, and I watched it over and over again. He hit that ball with the outside of his foot, and it did not seem accidental. It didn't. But he put that thing in the back of the net, and everybody on the pitch was surprised that it actually hit that inside corner. So here you have a striker that is ethical, very, very moral, and gifted. I think that with Dembaba beside him, he had a very hard time.
That's the question is, what did he do when Dembaba left? Once Ba left, he was garbage.
Yeah, he was ineffective. I mean, but
that's that. You can attribute that to some kind of growth necessary.
Well, just to interject for a second, if people don't know, Newcastle United in the Premier League, great club, historic club.
Yes.
Have a new shirt sponsor. It's a company called Wonga. And on their shirt, it's wonga.com, which is pretty much a loan shark company where they charge 200% interest and all the stuff on loans. And obviously, Papa Cisse being a devout Muslim, as Mark said, it's against his beliefs to to gain profit from a company that gains profit off of
a loan.
What did Virgin do though? What did Virgin America do? The last jersey they wore.
Newcastle.
Yeah.
Well, it was.
They're a bank. It's a bank, so they made
money.
It's Virgin money. They were still making money. That's my point. Is at this point you got to look at and see what he's trying to do. In my opinion.
But Virgin Money's a bank. Wonga's not a bank. It's a money lending.
Yes,
organization.
They are trying to gain stature.
But the Muslim
through this sponsorship. They're trying to change the perception of the public from. It's the equivalent of ace check cashing, trying to become a bank here in America.
And
that's
a big problem because, obviously, I mean, I'd probably be in a better position to know this than most. Newcastle is obviously in the north of England, and generally speaking, the more north you go in England, the more the economic depression has hit the hardest. So when you go up to Newcastle, which is almost Scotland,
yes,
you know, that high up in England, you have a lot of unemployment, you have a lot of broke people, and this is where Wonga.com are really trying to push their agenda.
Well, that's what they're trying to do, but the problem is the Muslim nature, like the Sharia law, anything like that, is in the end, what Muslims don't agree with, what Muslim law is you cannot charge interest on a new loan. And so Virgin does that, so Wonga does it. My problem is I look at it and I say, yeah, is he upset because of his Muslim beliefs? Absolutely. But in the end, I think it's about money for him. I know you can disagree with that. We all can disagree with it, but if it's a Muslim belief, Virgin money charge interest on every loan, just like every other bank. But Wonga charges more interest, so does that make it different? Or is he just wanting to get out of the contract?
That's definitely a thought.
That's definitely a thought, but I'll be friends with the robber, not the murderer. I guess the difference in that. I know Mark wanted to talk about the Gold Cup.
Gold Cup. CONCACAF Gold Cup, yes.
Nice.
We have on the 24th coming to Arlington, Texas, to Cowboys Stadium, a huge damn stadium. With great viewing capacity from all angles, the Gold Cup semis.
You don't work for the Cowboys Stadium, do you, Mark?
No, I don't. However, my girlfriend is friends with the Joneses, so I'd like to say hello.
In with the Joneses,
to Jerry and
welcome.
Jerry Jr. and Charlotte. Charlotte, thank you for the tickets to the sideline seats. My daughter and I love you very much. Muchas gracias. I'm not going to talk about Jerry Jones and the effects on the Cowboys because that's not my business.
Hey, Mark has actually gotten some tickets to the Gold Cup. Give it up to Mark.
Yes. Thank you, my girlfriend, Kim Gatlin.
Okay, so what do you think about the
okay, yeah, so Mexico yesterday played Trinidad Tobago, TNT. And Kenwyn Jones, the main striker and captain for TNT, actually plays for Stoke. He's not being played this past season because the guy's a lazy bastard. Holy crap. Cornell Glenn, never heard of him, but watching the guy work, his work rate was awesome. TNT v. Mexico was a good game in that I got to see some players I very rarely get to see. Their goalkeeper, TNT's goalkeeper, was crazy good. 25 attempts at goal, three quarters of the way through the match, and the guy stopped everything.
Shaka Hislop's his replacement for Trinidad and Tobago.
Dude, the guy worked, and Mexico was hard on these guys. 82nd minute, they kind of closed down, got tired, stopped thinking. Jimenez. The Mexico's number nine. There was a ball that came across. He just deflected a little bit, redirected, went in the corner, just inside the post. Great, great goal. Really unfortunate for the goalkeeper. and TNT played a match that was lazy. I mean, it's the Berbatov while he was with Manchester United. He was never lazy, very creative, but lackadaisical, very easygoing. That's what United fans view him as. That's how TNT played Mexico. If TNT would have had three more Cornell Glens on their squad, they would have won that match. If they had had another Cornell Glen instead of Kenwyn Jones, they would have won that match because the ball would have gone in. Kenwyn Jones, I don't know what the guy's going to do. He's 28. He's a beast of a man, but he's lazy. Holy crap. They could have won that. He's a one-trick pony, and he's got no tricks left. Everybody knows how he plays. They just mark him off the ball. They had one guy that was anywhere close to his size, and that was just in height. That's not body structure. The guy's a cinder block. He had maybe... Well, he didn't have enough touches on the ball. So Mexico goes through. They play the winner at 9 o'clock in Arlington of they play Panama in Arlington.
And Panama won their group, no?
Yes.
And that's the group with the
yes.
U.S. in.
So it's a replay Mexico-Panama, which is really exciting because Panama, I think, is going to take it to them. They're not going to be soft like Trinidad.
How have the U.S. done in this tournament?
Very, very well.
And Landon Donovan's leading the charge, no? He's in the squad, isn't
well,
he, for the Gold Cup?
Yes, he's found his way back into the national squad, but I think, I guess I don't see him as a leader. He's kind of like the Cesc Fabregas kind of leader by default.
Why did Mexico send their B squad compared to USA's?
Well, this tournament. We spoke about several weeks ago. I mean, this tournament in some ways is a bit of a nuisance. I mean, the year before the World Cup.
Well,
I mean, look, Mexico played in the Confederations Cup, which was a more important than the Gold Cup. You know, so, Mark.
Okay. This cup is the same as United View, the Carling, Community Shield, and the FA Cup, the beginning stages of it. It's a training ground for the younger players. The Mexico squad does not have the same impetus or energy going forward that the first or second team does, but these guys are young. Jimenez has great energy. And I think Ochoa is who's the number one goalkeeper for Mexico?
It's not Ochoa anymore.
No, Ochoa is a defender, right?
No, Ochoa. Well, they had a goalkeeper Ochoa for a while.
My point is though that the Gold Cup is merely a stepping stone for the younger guys to get into the World Cup squad. It's an opportunity to press against some decent squads that will give them some kind of pressure to get into the national
squad,
the first team.
Well, I have a question. Obviously, if people don't know by now, I'm from England, and the CONCACAF Gold Cup is the North American version of the European Championships. Now, the European Championships, in my opinion, is the number one international tournament in terms of competitive in the world. The European Championships is far more competitive than the World Cup, in my opinion, right? Is it a shame for North American fans to not look at this CONCACAF Gold Cup as a tournament of significance, whereas people in Europe see the European Championships as really important?
I think it's a matter of society. I mean, you can't compare the two.
Because for example, when England are going to play Spain in the European Championships, whereas the U.S. are going to play, you know, Trinidad and Tobago, is that what you're saying?
No. England and Spain will never have the same viewpoint as U.S. versus anybody outside of maybe Mexico, because the USA does not view the U.S. squad the same way England views the England squad. Okay. I mean, you as a what do you call yourself? A Brit? Englander?
No, I'm English. I'm not British.
Okay.
That's best.
Okay.
That's best.
No, that's what I say. Yes.
Do you see your brothers, your country brothers, Englanders, do they not year after year put the hopes on a squad that this year, this year is, I mean.
You're comparing us to Arsenal fans here. That's
Christ.
No, like. Not anymore.
How old is Lampard? 32, 33?
He's finished.
Okay. Gerrard. 31, 32?
Yeah. Lampard, same.
Yes. Okay. Do you remember when it... Not in 10.
Well, 2002 was when England had the chance.
In 6. It was... Can we play them together? And in 10, can we play them together?
It was even back to 2002. Okay. It's been that long.
Yes.
11 years. Yeah.
Yes. But it was always their world-class players. England puts their hopes of a nation on these guys. The U.S. does not do that because they've got the NFL, the Major League Baseball. They've got hockey. They've got basketball. They've got blam, 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 blam.
NASCAR.
Yes.
Turn left.
Okay. Let's go around
so
in the circle.
That is why you can't apply the same rules to how people perceive one versus the other. UEFA, the only comparison is CONMEBOL, not CONCACAF.
Okay.
Canada, they got hockey, dude. We got too much other stuff. We're getting stronger.
That's more of an excuse than anything at this point. You know, if you think about it, it's more of an excuse. We should be a nation that takes care of soccer, takes care of baseball, takes care of football, takes care of everything. It's an excuse. We haven't set up the academies. We haven't set up what we have to set. You know, we haven't done it. What we do is we go, oh, well, we're not good at soccer because, honestly, most of these people they get into it because they kick the football around. We haven't figured it out how to set it up right. Like, cause we try to do soccer, football, USL, we try to do MLS, all that. It's just bad. The thing is, the difference between us and England, England's what? We're 300 million people. I don't know how many people are in England. I have no clue.
Wait a second.
I have no clue, but I'm telling you what they do is they go through school. They go through everything.
Do you play?
I don't play.
Okay. Here's the difference between the U.S. and every other place in the world. How old is the FA? 1880?
It's 150 years old. Okay. The Football Association of England. It was last year, 150 years old.
1971, 70, 69, when the NASL first came through. Okay.
North American Soccer League.
If we say 1970 to now, that's 44 years.
But we don't do the academies like they do.
Well, okay.
How old are the academies?
Okay, look.
You go back to English soccer. English soccer.
I'm talking English soccer.
Yeah, yeah. No.
I'm looking at Jake,
the
non-Brit.
The difference why there's no academies here is because you have a collegiate system here. You have people go to college in all the sports, even the MLS. They go to college and then they get drafted into the sport.
Yes.
In England, these kids, Tom Cleverley got signed up for Man U when he was 8 years old.
I'm sorry, who?
Tom Cleverley.
Man United.
Ryan Giggs, Manchester United. Ryan Giggs, 11 years old. These people get put into the academies, which the academy, if people don't know, it's not just they go train there. There's a school there. They have their own teachers.
Yes.
They have their own blah, blah, blah.
Yes, yes, yes.
That happens in England when they're 8 years old.
Yes.
Here, the reason why it doesn't happen here is because there's a collegiate system. And there's a draft system.
And there's a club system where they're being told to choose between playing the Y, which is free, or relatively free, and the club system, which is up to $1,000 or more a season. It's absurd. That is why the U.S. team is turning more and more Latino because they need these kids that have grown up playing soccer in the neighborhood against guys that are their brothers and their neighbors' brothers versus...
That's 100% right, Mark. That's 100% right.
So the perception... You can't compare U.S. soccer to anybody else in the world because it's not the same. But back to the Gold Cup. There was a deep segue there.
We went about soccer culture.
The Gold Cup. Yeah. USA plays El Salvador. Costa Rica plays Honduras. Those are the two quarters. The winners of those play the 6 o'clock match at Cowboy Stadium.
July 24th.
So what I'm hoping is, I think it's going to be USA v. Costa Rica. And in the final, I really think it's going to be Panama. I don't think Mexico is going to go through.
So if Mexico makes it, the B team makes it, what happens when the B team beats USA?
Well, this USA team is the B team USA, apart from Landon Donovan.
Landon Donovan's there? Yeah. There's no Dempsey, I understand.
He had a sabbatical, that's why he's there.
Fuck Donovan.
Producer Gio just said an expletive.
I'm sorry, what was that?
What was that?
Hockey puck?
Okay, wait. Quick question. Something was brought up to me, and I want you... I should speak less on this podcast anyway. It's up to you guys, the guests. Someone said to me the other day, the reason why the Premier League, the English Premier League, is successful is because of its fans. It's because if fans didn't go to the games, they wouldn't pay for those tickets, they wouldn't get the money to buy the better players, blah, blah, blah. Whereas we talked about Serie A earlier. Fans don't go up to the stadium. Therefore, the teams don't get money, so they can't buy better players. Is the hardcore fanship for the EPL the reason why it's successful?
Okay. What is... We need to define that word then.
Okay.
What is successful?
The number one league in the world.
Okay. For what?
Club soccer.
No. The number one...
league in the world.
Okay. That goes to the television contracts.
Okay, that's a television contract.
That's the money, not the fans. That's like going to a movie. You don't pay for the movie anymore. They make their money on the popcorn and sodas, all of that other crap. The $12 they're taking from you for a movie is not their moneymaker. Their moneymaker is selling you popcorn that cost them 12 cents for $4.50.
What
about the same thing goes with the EPL. Unfortunately, Arsenal is the most successful club in the EPL because their investors are making money. I don't think United investors are making money.
Okay.
Not that, that kind of, that's Bundesliga is the most successful.
I mean that's a different point. I think the English Premier League is successful because the fans go to the games. They buy the tickets, so the clubs get money, they buy better players, the league gets better, the television companies come in and say, your league's the best, you've got the best players, we're going to pay you $1 billion a year to have your league on our TV. That's how the league has got success.
Have you seen what Borussia Dortmund has done for their fans and with their fans?
Okay.
Okay.
What is a more profitable league? The Premier League or the Bundesliga?
Can I talk real quick?
Yes, you can talk whenever you want. Dude. Okay. You can interject.
Here's my thing is, everybody's talking about who's more profitable, who's doing all this.
You don't care. It's out the window.
I don't care about who is making the most money. I don't care about that because the one thing I give a crap about is the fact that you're wearing a United shirt. You're a United fan. We care about the team we love. The team we love. I don't care who makes money. If you want to be a person that decides, oh, I'm going to make money, it's fine. I don't care if you were to buy a soccer team or a football team or anything like that. We decided to be Manchester United fans. Has nothing to do with money. I don't care about profitability. I don't care about how much this team, like this player costs this much. I don't care. We care about one thing: winning, living, fucking getting trophies. United. That's what we are. And that's what we do.
Okay, I have a question. Was there a comma between fucking and getting trophies? Or was there not a comma?
I throw commas every once in a while. I also like when I post on, I put like dot dot. I put ellipses everywhere.
I would much Mark brought out, but I wanted it to be ambiguous.
Okay. Here's my thing. I think the EPL is more exciting.
Yeah. Okay.
The style of play and the multiples of clubs that can challenge the top squads are more deep than Spain, than Germany, and certainly more than the French league and the Italian league. I think that is how the EPL is more successful. I don't think that they're more successful as far as money, because you've got City and Chelsea who have too many dollars, too many pounds, too many euros to throw at players. I think that if you want to redefine successful, then we can talk. But the EPL is
it attracts the most foreign owners.
And look at what the U.S. is supporting. They're not really supporting La Liga. They're certainly not supporting
MLS.
Ligue 1.
Oh, Ligue 1.
And they are not supporting Serie A. They're not really supporting Eredivisie.
They're not Ajax fans? That's
well, not like
I'm
I am.
I'm more of a Utrecht fan myself.
So I'm an FC 20 fan. Yeah.
It's the style of play that England offers is, without a doubt, the top. You can only watch so much Barcelona and so much Madrid, because that's really all Spain has. Germany has some challengers, but England, when we go to Stoke, we really don't know. We hope. When we're going to Norwich, we don't know.
You're almost echoing Jose Mourinho's comments when he said, you know, how competitive you have the teams that want to win the league. You know, the Manchester United's, the Spurs, the Man City's, the Chelsea's, the Arsenal's. And then you have every other team, but they're really difficult to beat. You know, like the competitiveness of the Premier League, which is what makes it really successful.
Exactly.
Every team goes there and they fight.
Exactly. Swansea, there's a few clubs the last couple of seasons that to me have been so underrated but so exciting to watch.
Oh,
Swansea, Michael Laudrup, the guy. Ooh, I'm glad he stayed for them.
Former Barcelona, Real Madrid,
yes.
Ajax.
Yeah,
fantastic player. Yeah.
So Swansea, Norwich, the Canaries, fantastic.
With Chris Hughton.
Yep.
Right. Paul Lambert, obviously, before that.
Yep. Two seasons ago, Newcastle.
Oh, when they with Pardew, when they got them, what, fifth or sixth in the league? Or
I actually I really thought. I
thought they'd kick on. They obviously didn't.
They didn't.
What about Blackpool a few years ago? I thought they were terrific with Ian Holloway.
Yep.
And then they faded away. After
so all of this, of this goes to really prove my point. When a club that you follow goes to another ground, and you really aren't certain if you can pull it off, and in the end you're hoping for one Fergie time and two a tie. I mean, when Everton, when we were up, holy
3-0.
Oh, and then 4-4. Give me a friggin' break. I wanted to slap some people.
Well, I think Mark's pretty much referring to the fact that if you're a Barcelona or a Real Madrid fan, unless you're playing each other, do you really have that much desire to watch the game when you know you're going to win? Whereas if you watch Chelsea versus Swansea or West Brom, who did great last season with Steve Clark, you don't really know. I mean, you think, well, we should win, but you never know. And I think that's why.
That is what makes the EPL what it is.
To end the show, I haven't asked Mark, because he wasn't here when I asked the question. Obviously, I haven't asked Chris. Why Manchester United? You know, why the club or why the Premier League? What made you become a supporter of A, soccer, and then B, your club side? Go ahead.
I walked into a bar about 6 years ago, and I walked in and met some people much like yourselves.
Dickheads?
Dickheads, yeah. Mostly. Assholes, dickheads. Anyways, yes, I walked in because I was having a bad day, and I walked into something I had no idea. You know, you drink early. You don't normally... You normally don't do that. I drank early that day. I had a really bad day. And I ran into some Manchester United fans. I ran into some Chelsea fans. I ran into some West Ham fans, I think, that day. Oh. But the Manchester United fans somehow became...
Your brothers.
Nah, my brothers. My brothers, my family. I mean, it's became the one thing I care about. So for the last 6 years,
you've been a Red Devil.
It's getting emotional, Carl.
Let's get a hug, dude.
Okay, Nate, quickly, name your favorite player at Manchester United since you've supported them.
Ryan Giggs. Easily. It's easily Ryan Giggs.
Mark?
Okay.
Why Man United? Why the Premier League? Why?
I watched the national squad play. And
which national squad?
England. And it was the right side. I watched Neville and Beckham and Scholes just clicking the ball, and it seemed like they were six players trying to take the ball from them, and they had this little triangle, and they were so calm. Never gave it up, played it to the center, and it was gone. And at that point, my father played for Ajax back in the 50s. And I grew up in Germany in the 70s. So Bayern and Germany and the Netherlands. And I know that's not conducive, but those were my teams. And then I watched England play that match. And I want to say it was maybe Greece or Turkey.
Is it 2002 before the World Cup when Beckham scored that amazing free kick?
No, this was 98. This was, I started watching in 98. And that end of the season was when they took the treble, 99.
Manchester United.
Yes. And that was when I really started watching United. And I got to see... Back then, the viewing capability was very limited.
Especially in the U.S., I would imagine, yeah.
Yes. But I got the chance to see Solskjaer come on and score some wonderful goals, and the play, and my even last season, my impression of Scholes is on corners to stand on top of that box and wait for that ball to pop over and volley it into the fucking net. That is why even last season I was thinking, come on, Scholes, take that shot, that's what I know from Scholes, outside the box on the 18, that's why his number was 18. Take that shot and put it in the net. We need you to do that. So my favorite player,
who's your favorite player?
I can't say that. I mean, because I watched some hard times, dude. Hard. 03, 02.
Well, that's when, and then Mourinho started to take over.
5, 6. I watched some hard times when I thought that we should win it. I watched Van Nistelrooy be able to pop goals in. I watched Berba. The guy is technically awesome, but he's slow and easygoing. I can't have one player that I follow because the whole club is it.
It's love, it's team.
By the way, you know what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in Mexican Molder. Spanish is? Javier Hernandez. That's what they say.
That's not on my Google Translator, but I'll have to make sure it's there. The guy's awesome. I love Hernandez. Javier Hernandez.
Chirito.
How about you?
How about me? Well, I said the podcast last week or 2 weeks ago? I got lucky. I was about 4 or 5 years old, going to the living room in my house. My dad's watching soccer or football on TV, and it was Team in Blue versus a Team in Red. And it was, I was 5 years old. It was the first Premier League season, 92-93 season. Team in blue was Oldham Athletic.
Oh.
The team in red was Manchester United. I said, I'll support the team in red. Thank God, Oldham suck. Manchester United are amazing. Or at least have been through this whole Premier League period. Favorite player, like, Eric Cantona was my favorite player. Just because he was the first real foreigner in the Premier League that did everything. Yeah. Mark and Chris get goosebumps. Eric Cantona is just... Before Thierry Henry, before Dennis Bergkamp, before Cristiano Ronaldo, before Juan Mata, Eden Hazard, all these great players, there was Eric Cantona, and he was changed everything. And plus, when can you know another athlete that didn't announce he was retiring? The season ends, he calls a press conference, he retires, he's only 31 years old, and he was still brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, and he disappears. He doesn't become a television pundit, he just disappears, you know.
Only to show up at the NASL, New York Cosmos.
Only to show up as they're part of the chairman of the New York Cosmos. But that got me into Manchester United, and I've been following ever since. Half my family are West Ham fans, because my mom's from East London, and then my dad's a Queen's Park Rangers fan. Although secretly, he's an Arsenal fan, but he gets really pissed off if I say that. So yeah, football's like, yeah, it's
so your dad is an unhappy man.
He is an unhappy man. But he loves Arsene Wenger. And
yes, we all do.
We all do, but you know.
The professor.
But Manchester United, so I got lucky. Producer Gio is reminding me. It's at On The Ball Show for the Twitter. It's On The Ball Soccer Podcast on Facebook. We're at the Londoner in Uptown. Great food, great beer, great service. And,
thank you, Jake. You're awesome.
thank you,
Jake.
Thank you, Mark and Chris. Producer Gio, thank you so much as always. We're on the ball.